I have to ask you a question. What'd you get out of the prayer that was just prayed? Sometimes I ask that question at home because things catch my ear.
Yes.
I heard something about emptying out and not listening to the devil's whisperings. And if you're mindful, you'll get a message in the prayer before you ever get up off your knees. So it's good to be in agreement and say amen and yes, Lord, but take into account what is being said. I'm going to touch on something tonight that should always be in the forefront of your mind, your heart. A lot of times when we drive in for service on Sunday morning, I see various things taking place. Some people are walking, some are jogging. I've seen a time or two where someone had their golf clubs in their car and you could see them sticking up in the window. They're headed to the golf course somewhere. Sometimes you just see people just standing on the porch, sitting on the porch. And then who knows how many others are still in the bed asleep. But you know, there's coming a time where we're going to have to meet the Lord. And if we have not emptied out, if we are still full of our own thoughts, we'll get off track. A lot of people want to be able to tell somebody else what to do. And I'll just be honest with you. I never and still don't understand why some are so anxious to preach. You might say, well, that way I can be seen, but I've always had the thought that that's not something that I have to do as far as my own thoughts are concerned. But nevertheless, as you and I go through this world, I want to read a comment that a person once made. He said, "Never forget the day of judgment. Keep it always in view. Frame every action and plan with the reference to its unchanging decisions." And I'll stop in the middle of his statement. How often do you think about standing before the Lord in the judgment? And when you are doing things, and I remember somebody asked a question and said, well, if the Lord came while you were doing such and such, would you be all right with that? And it's like, oh yeah, I wouldn't have no problem. I don't think any of us know what that's going to be like. And I think we'll have a far, far greater problem than we would ever imagine. The other thing I've mentioned at times, I've seen a couple of instances where a house blew up from a gas explosion. In one instance, the man was trying to light his hot water heater, got too much gas in the house. And when I say it blew up, there was a two-story addition built on the back of this house. It destroyed the whole thing. And he was in shock. He had on a t-shirt and most of it was burned off of it. In another instance, a house blew up. Right next door to this house, a man was in his driveway working up under his car. And he said the concussion from that explosion blew him from under the car. And I remember we were at our mother-in-law's house, and this house was on the other end of the block. It shook the block so that as I was coming through a doorway, I almost fell down. Had that doorway not been there where I fell up against the door jamb, I would have been on the floor. And I walked down to see what was going on, and this man was so shook up and was stuttering so bad that he couldn't hardly explain what had happened. And we didn't know if he'd been involved in it as far as causing the explosion or what. But as they began to look around, whoever lit this off, they found him in the neighbor's backyard. You could see some blood drops, and it led to him. And as I looked around, I began to wonder, and another man, he began to ponder and say the same thing. He said, I think it blew him over here. If he'd have staggered over here, we would have seen a trail of blood. The little trail we saw was no more than 2 to 3 feet away from him. Well, it didn't kill him, hurt him pretty bad. But what would he have thought if it had taken his life? I've seen some other instances. I was on my way to work one morning. Traffic was stopping. And as it turned out, two men in a pickup truck, I'm assuming the driver went to sleep. Maybe the other man was already asleep. And he ran into the back of a semi-trailer and the truck caught on fire. And the highway patrol was there and he was begging people for fire extinguishers, trying to put out the fire. But when I looked over, and in that instance, I didn't have one in my car, didn't have a fire extinguisher. So there wasn't much I could do. And the truck was already engulfed in flames, and I looked and both of them were out. I don't know if they were dead at that point or not, but I know they were dead before it was all over because it engulfed that truck and there was nothing you could do to stop it. And I thought about that from time to time, that wherever they were on their way to that morning, they weren't thinking that I won't see the rest of this day. I won't even see the rest of this morning. But something happened there, and now they're in eternity. So the writer, he said, frame all of your plans with the judgment in mind. I am mindful when I went to college, I had that in mind, that I want to be somewhere where I can still get to church. When we graduated, I interviewed for certain jobs, and I looked at that like, well, I don't want to move somewhere where I can't get to church. You still need to keep all of these other things in mind as you go through life. And even when it comes down to what occupation you might choose as you go through this world, you still need to understand, I must keep the judgment. I must keep God. I must keep heaven in view. And so that sometimes limits the choices and the options that you might have available to you. But you have to understand, one day you're going to stand before God. And how much will that really, really nice job and super nice lifestyle, how much will that matter then? So he said, keep this in view and never forget it. All of these unchanging decisions, I've told young men, you can get into some things. And maybe your parents at the beginning can straighten them all out, smooth them all over. But as I told my son and told some others, you get a little older, and now you start to make $100,000, $200,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 mistakes. And I was pretty plain with him. Say, you have a baby, and now you got to pay child support for the next 18 years. You add up how much that's going to cost you in those 18 years. And so you consider, when you make those kind of mistakes, mom and dad can't straighten them out for you. Well, the decisions that we make in reference to the judgment, they are unchanging decisions. They make the difference between heaven and hell. They make a difference in you having a whole lot of trouble in your life or not so much trouble as you go through this world. So he's telling us, keep this in view. He went on further to say, foolish men, imagine that because judgment for an evil thing is delayed, there is no justice, but only accident here below. Judgment for an evil thing is many times delayed, some day or two, some century or two, but it is sure as life, it is sure as death. In other words, it's coming. It may be delayed, but you will not get away. It may be some centuries until the final judgment comes. And even then, when God comes for us, you're going to be in a place of either torment or bliss. That won't be the final place, but you're going to have to deal with some of the things that you have made decisions on. And so you and I need to understand. And I would say it like this. You have heard me say I used to work in the utility industry, worked where we generated power. And I remember one sister years ago, she said, aren't you afraid to work there around electricity? I said, well, you have a healthy respect for it, but I'm not afraid. And she's like, I couldn't work there to know that there's a possibility that I could get electrocuted. Well, there were some other possibilities there too. There's a possibility that if you're not very mindful and you come up on a steam leak in the right place, superheated steam could cut you in two and you can't see it when it first comes out. And there are other machinery around there that could kill you if you are not mindful of what you are doing. And so I let her know, well, you have to have a healthy respect when you are in those places. But the Lord taught us to fear him. He's the one that can destroy both body and soul. And so you and I need to understand that when it comes to the judgment, it is a most serious matter, and it is something we should be mindful of every day. Many people don't like to look at it. They want to ignore it. They don't want to think about it. But you have to recognize that every day the Lord is making decisions about what we're doing, how we live, so forth. Some of the apprentices, when they're apprentice linemen, they get graded every day. And they're on probation for 5 years. And they are judged on their work every day. And sometimes the people might not be so impartial when they're judging what they do. But they're under that gun, if you will, that whole entire time. The Lord is, if you will, grading us every day of our lives. And we should always keep the judgment in view. See, those young men, they have to keep it in view because every day the journeyman they work with gives them a grade or a number from 1 to 5. 1 not being so good. 3 is average. And usually that's about where they'll place them, unless they have done exceptionally well in whatever they were doing that day. But I have seen a few where sometimes they gave them a 2. And I remember one journeyman, I heard him tell this young man, I gave you a 2 today because what you did it all right, but you took too long to do it. You should have been more efficient than that. And I thought, well, looked like to me, if you had it right, then that would be the best. I'd rather they take a little extra time and it be right so I don't have to come back and redo it. But he wanted him to reach a point where he could move with confidence and get it done quickly. And I remember this young man asked me what I thought about it, and he started beating himself up. Well, I could have done this, and I should have done that, and I should have done the other. And I told him, I can't answer for you. And things got to a point where he finally decided to leave and move back to Iowa. He even asked me about that. Well, what do you think I should do? And I said, I can't answer for you. I said, but the only thing I can tell you is this. He was what they would call a fourth-step apprentice. It's a 5-year program, so he only had 1 more year to go. He'd become a 5th step a year to go, Part of it is spending in class, then you're out in the field. Then you go back in class again. Then when you're out in the field for the second time in that last year, then you're done. He said, well, maybe I could go to Iowa and I could start over, or I could maybe drop back a little bit and then pick up and finish up in a program over there. And he again asked me what I thought he should do. And I finally told him, I said, well, I cannot answer for you. I said, but all I can tell you is this. If I was a four-step apprentice and I was that close to being done, they would have a problem with me trying to run me off. I just told him, we have a fight on our hands. And I didn't necessarily mean fisticuffs, but it'd be like, no, you're not going to beat me that way. I'm not going to have gone this far, and then because you say a few things, I then turn on myself, and now I'm going to leave. I told him, you know, go back into the class. When you go back out in the field, you'll be in a different location. Perhaps somebody there might treat you differently. And he said, well, you know, they all talk to each other, which they do. They find out who's coming, then they call where they've been. Well, what are they like? Are they good? Are they bad? Are they sorry? What is it? And that can influence what you're doing. But I told him, they'd have a fight on their hands if it was me. I said, but that's just me. I said, I wouldn't go that far and then turn back. And it's the same way as you go through this life. You keep the judgment in mind. There's no need to live and walk with God a certain distance, if you will, and then turn around and go back to something else. No, the devil needs to have a fight on his hand where you and I determine you're not going to beat me that way. I'm going to get my crown, and I'm going to get it the old-fashioned way. I'm not going to all this other stuff where somebody says it's easier. And even as I told one of my neighbors when he found out that I wanted to go to school to be an engineer, he said, oh, that's going to be hard. You sure you can do that? I never had one day in the class. I'm still waiting for the fall classes to start. I told him they're either going to flunk me or they're going to give me my degree. And there's been some tough classes to get through, some bad teachers to get around, some tough grades to get around. But it stayed after till I got done. And now nobody can take that away from me.
That's right.
So you keep the judgment in mind and recognize that the Lord may not come down on you for everything that's going on, but don't think you got away with something. May God help us as we go through this life. You know, the writer there in the 9th chapter of Hebrews, that 27th verse, he stated, and as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this, the judgment. So we're not going to escape it. It is a divine decree. It is appointed. We sung that song where it said that the Lord on his fire, are these mighty planets stayed? Do you know what that fire means? That word is saying that someone of authority has decreed something that created something, and no more effort is involved in it. He created all of this. Now, you and I, we buy a car, you buy a house, and what do you have to do with it? Huh? You got to maintain it.
Maintain it.
And you're going to have to pay for some repair bills and some other things. My sister just told me my brother had to get a repair made on his car. Cost him almost $1,000. She said she asked him, did you feel kind of sick when they told you what it was going to cost? She said, I feel sick for you. And I thought, it's going to cost that much to do that? So next time I see him, I'm going to have to tell him, show me what happened here, because I wouldn't have thought it would have cost quite that much. But nevertheless, you have to maintain it. What I'm getting to there is that he said, alone on his fire are these mighty planets stayed. When he created all of this, he does not have to maintain it. He said, this is what it will be, and that is what it has been. And it will continue that way until he says it will be here no longer. And I sometimes think about it, and you stop and consider. We don't really truly know how many years this earth has been in existence. But man has been tilling this earth and trying to raise fruit and crops and whatnot on it ever since Adam and Eve fell in the garden. And you think about as we was coming up the road there and you see the almond trees. And I made mention to Sister Ava, I said, well, this area right in here produces most of the almonds in this country. And you look at some other places. You go to Kansas and it is the wheat basket of this whole United States. Nobody raises more wheat than Kansas does. You look around to other places and you see what they're growing. And then you think about how many years this earth has been in existence and people have been living off of what they've been growing. And this earth is still producing and yielding. God is the one who set that in order. And when you look at all of those things, you can see a glimpse of his wisdom. You can see a glimpse of his majesty. You can see a glimpse of his power and his authority and how he set all of this up, that you and I might be able to live. And we don't even know how many more hundreds of years this earth will go before he calls it into judgment. But people will still be farming and raising food and supplying it to the people and so forth, because God has set it up that way. And he won't have to come back and say, well, let me touch the earth and give it a new birth of fertilizer and whatnot. We just keep going. Yes, man has learned to do some things to help maintain the land that he has control of, but God is the one who has set all of that in order. So when you consider his faithfulness, when you consider his power and his wisdom, yes, you had best not forget, not even for one day, that the judgment is still in view. And so he lets us know that by his decree, man will live this life, but after that, he must meet God in the judgment, and God will determine when your expiration date is. People do all the things, and I've heard them say time and again, well, when it's your time to go, or when your number comes up, that's just it. I've heard a lot of people in the world say that. That don't keep them from struggling, trying to stay here longer and longer and longer. But nevertheless, God will make that determination, and you and I will have to submit to it. And you stop and think about this judgment after death, when he says that is enough for them, it is their time, and he says the death angel to come get us at that moment, then we'll meet him in the judgment. But think about that judgment. It must be, in the execution of it, a final judgment. Most people do not get a second chance. I know you've heard and you read about people that died and then they saw visions of this or that and they came back and now they're trying to tell you. And I can't argue with all of that. The only thing I can say is that when you look in God's word, you don't see any examples of people who died and went to heaven and then came back and told you what was going on. But you stop and consider, as you go through this life, it will be very few people that will die and get a second chance to come back and try to make right, live right, and be ready to meet God in peace. So it's final. You consider that there won't be any stay of execution. There's no appeal process with God. We can plead with him, but there's nothing where you can just delay it and delay it and delay it. When he determines that it is time, it is time. You also consider that it must be, therefore, a perfect judgment, a faultless judgment. There will be no mistakes, not one, when the Lord weighs us in his balance. There will not be anyone who can say, well, I didn't get a fair hearing. I didn't get treated right. There was evidence that was hidden and there were things that were not brought up. None of that will ever exist when it comes to God. Everybody is going to get exactly what they are supposed to get. That right there in itself, when I consider that there will be no mistakes made in the judgment, when the angels separate the sheep from the goats, there will be no mistake. That tells you something about God's almighty power and his knowledge, his wisdom, his omniscience and the whole thing. And when you look at it and you consider whatever he decides, then there will be nothing that I can do to escape that. And I will have to face the judgment that God has put upon us at that point in time. You know, sometimes we think, oh, I'm living a pretty good life. I'm a pretty good example, and I'm this and I'm that. Huh. I don't like saying that. And so you consider, no matter what you are or what you have done when it comes to God, it came from him first.
Right.
And so you have nothing to think highly of yourselves about. And I've had a couple of instances, once in Wichita and once out here when I was at work, co-workers have said, well, what I don't like about Christians, they have that holier-than-thou attitude. I don't know if they said it to see what I was going to say about it or what, but I, in both cases, I just told them, I said, well, a true Christian has nothing to have a holier-than-thou attitude about. Because they know whatever they are, it came from God. And so they do not have space to sit there and try to act like they are above you in any kind of way. And they never gave me no response after that, but I just told them that's what a true Christian is. And as I told one lady once at work, I said, well, a minister one time said there is a profession and there is a possession. I said, a lot of people are professing, but they are not possessing what God has in store for them. So you and I have nothing to be lifted up about. Daniel, the fifth chapter, starting with the first verse down through verse 6, you consider this example, you have heard about it, but think about what Daniel does here. And again, recognize that in God dealing with each one of us in the judgment, there will be no errors made. There will be no mistakes made. And when he gets to the end of what he has to say, you will have nothing to say either. And I know the scripture says, well, people are going to say, Lord, didn't we do this? Didn't we do that? Didn't we do the other? But to me, that's just desperation talking. Because when I look at it and I think about some of the things that my parents will sometimes give you chores to do, if you didn't get them done and everybody else says, well, can I go here? Can I do that? And yeah, you can go. Yes, you can go. And then you try to ask and they say, did you do what I told you to do? No. Well, then you can't go. You already knew what the answer was. You're just trying to get by in desperation. And you learn if they give you something to do, you had best get it done because the time will come when you'll want to go do something. And it could be a couple of weeks later, but somehow they seem to always remember you didn't do that. So since you didn't do that 2 weeks ago, no, you can't go. You stay here with me. So may the Lord help us as we go through this life. Daniel 5, verse 1.
Belshazzar, the king.
Yes.
Made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords.
All right, and think about this. He is dealing with the king. So if he's dealing with the king that way, is anybody here a king today? Only spiritually, if you say it and been raised from sin to royal honor, even reigning Lord with thee. But in the natural sense, no. Now, carry on.
And drank wine before the thousand.
Yes.
Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels.
Yes.
Father Nebuchadnezzar
had taken out of the temple.
The temple, which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines,
might drink therein.
Then they brought the golden vessels.
Yes.
Taken out of the temple of the house of God,
which was at Jerusalem.
And the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver,
of brass,
of iron,
of wood,
and of stone. In the same hour came four fingers of a man's hand and wrote over
against the candlestick. Upon the plaster
of the wall of the king's palace, and the king saw the part of the hand that wrote.
Yes.
And then the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loose,
and his knees smote one against another. This man was scared out of his wits. And you and I would be too if you saw just a hand that writing up on the plaster. I don't know if he was digging into the plaster as it was writing so he couldn't erase it away or what, but just to see what happened shook him up. But think about it. The Israelites, by their own actions, were taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar. They didn't really follow God, so he allowed Nebuchadnezzar to take them over, and he moved them over 1,000 miles away from where they came from. You imagine part of your punishment, you got to walk all that distance. Some of us don't want to walk a couple of blocks. They had to walk that distance. He might have had some carts to haul some of them, but most of them had to walk that trail till he got them to Babylon, and now they are his captives and serving him. That's how Daniel ended up there. But as you look upon it, you begin to see that something happened here, and he couldn't do anything about it. The king was sitting there shaking, his knees are hitting up against each other. He's nervous as can be. Read on from verse 10 to verse 17. And you think about it, he asked his wise men to come and read this, tell me what it means. And they couldn't do it. See, if God don't want you to know something, he won't let you know. And these wise men are supposed to be schooled in languages and all these different things, and they couldn't tell him. Now read on.
Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king,
yes,
and his lords, came into the banquet,
came into the house,
and the queen spake,
and she did, this is actually his mother, but she speaks and she tells him.
O king,
yes,
let not thy thoughts trouble thee.
Yes.
Let thy countenance be changed.
There is a man in thy kingdom,
in whom is the spirit of the Holy God.
Yes.
And in the days of thy father's life, and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods.
Yes.
Now him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the kings, I said, thy father made master of the magicians,
astrologers, Chaldeans and soothsayers. There is somebody amongst the saints that your father has put over all of his wise men, soothsayers, whatever tricks they had to try to feel like they could interpret the future and whatever might come along his way, understand his dreams and whatnot. He said, there is a man who has the spirit. And she spoke about it from the standpoint of what she understood, but she said, he has understanding, he has light and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, G-O-D-S. He has more wisdom than all of them. You need to talk to him. Read on.
For as much as an excellent spirit,
yes,
and knowledge,
and understanding, interpreting of dreams,
and showing of hard sentences,
dissolving of doubts,
were found in the same,
Daniel, all in this one man.
Now let Daniel be called.
And he was shown the interpretation.
Then was Daniel brought in before the king.
Yes.
And the king spake and said unto Daniel,
art thou
Daniel, which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of
Jewry?
Thank you. I have even heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee.
Yes.
Now, the wise men,
the astrologers,
have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations
and dissolve doubts.
Now,
if you can read the writing
and
make it known unto me what it's saying
thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet.
I'm going to reward you. Read on.
And have a chain of gold about thy neck.
Yes.
And shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, Let thy gifts be to thyself.
Give thy rewards to another.
And I will read the writing.
But I'll read it and I'll let you know.
And make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, the most high God of Nebuchadnezzar, thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor, and for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would he slew, whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would set up, and whom he would
put down. When his heart was lifted up, his mind was hardened in pride. Yes.
And they took his glory from him.
They took it away from him.
And he was driven from the sons of men.
And his heart was made like the beast.
And his dwelling was with the wild asses.
Yes. Grass like an oxen.
And his body was wet with the dew of heaven.
Till he knew
the Most High God
ruled in the kingdom of men.
And that he appointed over it
whomsoever he will.
And thou, son, O God,
listen to this.
Hast not humbled thy heart.
Though thou knewest all this.
But hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. And that they have brought the vessels of his house before thee. And thou.
And thy lords, thy wives, thy concubines have drunk wine in them.
And thou hast praised
the gods of silver and gold. Brass, iron, wood, stone. They don't see. They can't hear. They don't know. In whose hand your breath is.
And whose are all thy ways.
Hast thou not glorified. Now stop and consider. Daniel dealt with this king. And I don't know how he felt. And I don't know how your parents did you. But I just have to ask. Whenever you got a spanking or whooping from your parents, did they talk to you while you was getting the whooping? You know not to do that? Or as my dad would say, we're not going to do that anymore. You knew and understood. No, daddy, I'm not going to do it anymore. But it's like, why do they have to whoop me and talk to me at the same time? But in this instance, Daniel is giving him a history lesson. You saw what happened to your father. You took note of how he had to leave his kingdom. He's out there like a wild animal. He's eating grass. You talk about humiliation and being humbled by God. I find that sometimes people amongst us, I don't know if they want to be seen or what it is, but they kind of get lifted up like, oh, I'm this or I'm that, and I know the scriptures, and I know. You don't know anything. Stop and consider. I used to tell them at home, from the unsaved to the saved, from the least sanctified to the sanctified, to the old to the young. I say, wherever you fall, you and I need to realize that when it comes to God, we don't know nothing. Why? Because he is an infinite and an almighty God. And whatever we come to learn is just barely a drop, if you will, in the bucket. And so when you and I look upon it, and it reminds me sometimes when you set up equations in engineering, there's times when you will introduce infinity into the equation to set it up. And then when you begin to solve it, infinity makes a whole lot of things go away. And I've seen, especially with one professor, you'd have this long equation across your page. If you had it set up right, you did not need a calculator, because anything multiplied by or anything divided by infinity, when you are doing the calculation, drops out to nothing. And you have this little bitty answer after all of that stuff had been set up. And it's like, wow, how does he do that? Others would wonder, like, you had this big long equation. You think, oh man, it's going to take me 15 or 20 minutes to grind through this equation. And I got four more problems to do. I'm going to run out of time. But if it was set up right and you found the right key, all of a sudden everything disappeared to nothing and you got the answer in just a few minutes. You consider, we don't know as much about God as we think we know. And Job's interrogation by God should help us to understand that. And so you and I stop and you look at it. Daniel gave him a hard history lesson. You saw all of this.
Yeah.
You saw what happened to your father. And you still served gods that can't hear, can't see, they don't know nothing. And when it's all said and done, the one in whose your breath is in his hand, you didn't glorify him. That's why you saw the handwriting on the wall. And he brought out those plates and utensils and whatnot. Oh, these is what my father took out of the temple when he captured the Israelites. And we're going to have a party now, and we're going to praise our God for giving us this wonderful victory. And what did God say? He said, I am God, and there is no other. And he said, I am a jealous God. Do you know what that means? It's not jealousy like we can have one towards another, but he's saying, I do not tolerate rivals. And so you have seen it when the Philistines tried to set up the covenant of the ark, or the ark of the covenant, in there with their God. You go back and read that and see what happened to their God. And the Lord gave them a warning. He didn't just destroy their God right then and there. He just laid it down, face down, like, you need to understand, I am the God. And when they're going to put it back up, the next time they came, it was broken in pieces. They got the message then, didn't they? Oh, this is the Israelites' God, and we need to get rid of this ark. You would have thought they would say, well, if he can do that to our God, we need to quit serving him, and let's try and serve this one. But see, that's not the way men think a lot of times. But you need to keep the judgment in view, because we don't think that way a lot of times. And we can do something to each other, say something about each other. We can treat each other in different ways and then go on and think it's all right when it is not all right. May God help us as we go through this life. And I remember I got sick, and I just told the Lord, Lord, you know, I've been fortunate to have good health. And in one sense, Lord, I can't just say that I've been divinely healed. But in this situation, I want to be divinely healed so that my children can see that this salvation works in this day and time. I don't know if they ever paid attention or not. But I do know this much, that I went through some things. And when people heard about it, I remember Sister Rachel Hargraves asked me, isn't it kind of scary? But you know what? Somebody else was saying that, well, because he wouldn't come and do this or that, the Lord is whipping him. They had no clue. The Lord took me through that experience because I asked him to take me through it. I didn't know he was going to take me the way he did take me. But when you and I look upon it, I consider, well, people's going around saying, oh, the Lord was whipping him. Well, if he was, then they should have taken note that he can whip you too. And there were some things later on that he had to deal with where they didn't take note of that. And I remember a young person came to me and said, there's some things happening around here. I said, yes, there are. And they said, but people don't seem to realize that it's happening to them. I said, you are so right. They said, I don't want that to happen to me. I started laughing. Then don't do what you see them doing, because judgment is coming. And you know, sometimes judgment comes with us when we get out of hand in some church stuff. You'll get taken out of this world. And that has happened many a time, way too many times. So may God help us keep the judgment always in view, because things can happen and you can get taken out of here and don't even know why you got taken out. May God help us as we go along the way. So he gave him this history lesson. And you think about it, his mother had to tell him, there is a man who has the spirit of the gods, has an excellent spirit. I'm going to put it in today's terms. When the going got rough and none of his cronies, none of his buddies, none of his doctors, none of them could help him, what did he do? But he turned back to one of them old fogey saints that he had done, his father had captured and brought back to serve him. And it still happens in this day and time where people will get into things that they can't get out of. And where do they turn? They'll come back to them old fogey saints. Now I want you to pray me out of this stuff. But it doesn't always happen that way, as sometimes they get to meet the handwriting on the walls for them. Stop and consider. The queen didn't send him to another king. Go try their wise men. Didn't send him to Egypt. Way back in them days, Egypt would have been kind of like the United States. They was up at the top of the chart when it came to understanding the signs of the times and the rotations and the seasons and all those things. They were way ahead of a lot of people. But she didn't send him to them. She said, you got a prisoner. You need to go talk to him. He has the spirit of the gods in him, an excellent spirit. He has light. He has wisdom. He has understanding. How did she find out about that? And so it is, even in this day and time. And I have seen some people that talked bad about the saints. But when they got in trouble, they was putting out a call for prayer. And it's like, why do you expect that now? You think about this. I'm trying to get through this. But I remember someone made a decision, said, my sister was not saved. And you'll find out amongst her siblings, we call her Sister Straight. And she told me one day, she said, well, you know, things have been said and they're doing this and that. And they're saying that I'm not saved. But this person had some pigs they was raising and I guess some of them got sick. So they sent word by way of the same person that they told she was not saved. They sent word by that person, say, ask her to pray for my pigs. And as she's telling me this on the phone, I was trying to stop her from talking. Hey, wait. And finally, she's like, what? I said, I thought you wasn't saved. Why are they asking you to pray if you're not saved? May God help us as we go through this life. But you see, when people get in a strait, and it don't have to be a real tight one, then they want them saints to pray. And guess what? They expect you to get something from the Lord for them, too. One of the mothers there at the school said something, and Sister Ava didn't know no better. She told her, I'm going to pray. And when she prayed, something happened. So the lady came back and said, well, when you do that, it's like magic. She's like, no, it's the Lord. It's the Lord. Well, you see, they get a hold of that, and then they go, oh, take some more to her to pray about. It's like that. May God help us, though. You keep the judgment in mind, and then you and I can live in a way to where when those kind of situations arise, you don't have to go and stop and pray, Lord, help me to get straight so I can pray for their situation. But he dealt with Belshazzar, and he pointed out these things to him. And he's talking to him pretty straight. He's not being mean, but he's not mincing any of the words. He's giving it to him the way it is supposed to be given. And so when you look upon it, you consider as he went along and he's letting him know, this is what happened, though thou knewest all this. When you see people having different experiences in life, you had best take note. You need to learn from that. You need to pay attention to that. They need to pay attention themselves. But you and I need to pay attention and realize that when you see these things happening to other people, you pay attention so you don't get caught short as you go along. There are some times where one of my siblings would get in trouble. And that particular day, my mother wore her out. We felt sorry for her, but I wasn't going to say anything. You wanted to say, Mom, can you lighten up just a little bit? You know, she should get the point by now. But it's like, no, you stay out of the way. And what you learned from what you saw is don't ever do that one because Mama does not like it. And I have told people she was a Baptist, but a lot of the things that people do, she didn't allow us to do. Things people said we weren't allowed to say. And so you and I need to stop and consider as you see the experiences and the results in people's lives. Learn from that. Don't just go along, well, that's not me. I won't do that. You learn to apply that to a whole lot of other things that you won't be doing as well. So you consider, he gave him this history lesson. And in doing so, what he has done, he has validated God's judgment upon Belshazzar. He's really letting him know there's a reason for this. And God is wholly justified in doing what he is going to do. And of course, you know the rest of that story when he began to interpret this, and he lets him know there in that 25th verse, he reads to him what it is. Then he tells him the first word means God has numbered thy kingdom. It is done. It is over. You are not going to be king anymore. Then he tells him the next word, and he says, you are weighed in the balances and are found wanting. You are on the short end of this thing because you did not pay attention to what happened to your father. And then he says, your kingdom is divided and it is given to the Medes and the Persians. And you know, it says, in that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. That very night. Now, I ask the question, does judgment have to come immediately for us to learn to do the right thing? Because a lot of times people get by, well, nothing happened. The Lord didn't strike me down. And I remember as children, I don't know if they ever did that out here. Sometimes somebody would say something and you say, I don't believe it or whatever. And say, well, if I'm not telling the truth, then may the Lord strike me down right now. Or may lightning hit me and strike me down and God take me out. And now when you look back at that, you think, boy, we did not know what we were saying. We didn't know what we were inviting upon us. May God help us as we go through this life. Consider that very night, he lost his life. Judgment came upon him immediately. Why the Lord decided to do it in that way, I cannot answer, but I know he is justified in all that he does. And so you and I don't want to take for granted. Judgment is coming. You will not get away. And so we should be careful then about how we live this life, how we speak to one another, what we say about one another. And I understand you can look at someone's life and see some of the things they're doing, and you make a decision, well, that's not the way to be, or that's not worthy of somebody calling themselves a Christian. And I have looked at some things, and I have told some at times that when you conduct yourself the way you do, you make a bad reflection on me as a man, because it's easy for people to think all men are that way when they are not. And so may God help us as we go through this life. I've seen some that they have excuses for why things haven't turned out. And it's like, you know what? You say, well, my job don't pay enough. Well, I had a dad. He had some extra things that he said he never did, but he got hung for them. And I have a letter from an attorney that finally said, you are now free from this unjust judgment. And I consider that, and it's like, well, you know what he did? He went and got another job. And for all I can remember, from the time I was old enough to realize he was going to work till after I left home, he worked two jobs, Monday through Friday, sometimes on Saturday. But he did what he had to do. And I can remember many times where I'm trying to get my homework done for engineering and I'm up till 2 or 3 in the morning, and you go to use the restroom, you pass by a certain room, and there he is with his glasses on. He's got his Sunday school book in his hand and he's asleep because he's been sitting there studying his Sunday school lesson, and now he's done went to sleep studying his lesson. And if he happened to hear you and he'd wake up, he'd go back to read some more. And I thought, here it is, 2 in the morning. He's going to get up and go to work and be there no later than 8. And he's studying his Sunday school lesson. He's reading his Bible. He has a commentary open trying to find out what the Word of God says. And I thought, we have no excuse. We have no excuse. And, you know, we'll say, well, I'm tired. Sister Ava had to deal with some first graders, and she came home and she stepped in the door. I looked at her and said, you done. I could see it on her face. She said, you're right. She just went on to the bedroom and went to sleep. I had to laugh. I thought them first graders must have been working her today. Well, may God help us. But he working two jobs, 2 8-hour jobs. And yet he would be up late when he got home at 2 in the morning studying the Word. May God help us. Matthew, the 25th chapter, verse 31 through 34. Look at what it says here at this point. And this is Jesus talking. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, all the holy angels with him, then he's going to sit upon the throne of his glory. Before him shall be gathered all nations. He separate them one from another, as a shepherd divided his sheep from the goats. He'll set the sheep on his right hand, the goats on the left. Then shall he say unto them on his right hand, yes, inherit the kingdom prepared for you. All right.
Where I was a hunger, and he gave me meat.
Well, let's drop down to verse 41.
Then shall he say unto
them on the left,
also them on the left,
depart from me, everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. Now, you consider, there is going to be a final separation. I don't know where you want to be, but I know where I want to be. And when you consider the circumstances to divide the sheep from the goats, you know, I take note of it sometimes. You ever heard of the Innocence Project? Where they take on people's cases that say, I didn't do this. You know, a lot of those people have been in prison for 20 years or more, up to 40 years or so, trying to say, I'm innocent, I did not do this. And judgment was made, evidence was suppressed. Some things weren't even searched out. It's like, we got our man or we got our woman and this is it. But then somehow they finally get someone to listen and they begin to dig into some things and they go back and look at things and they begin to uncover evidence was not presented. And when we looked at that evidence, it said this or it said that. And now they get out. What has always amazed me is that most of the time when that person does get out, not that it happens a whole lot, but when they do get out, one of the first things the reporters want to know is, do you have any hard feelings? Do you have any ill will? And they say, I'm just glad to be free.
Yes.
And I remember one, he said, I would not allow myself to get to where I had bitter feelings against anyone because I knew that would eat you up. And I would not let them have that kind of control over me. And yet he's still hoping that somehow this judgment will be overturned. There will be no Innocence Project in that day because it will be completely unnecessary. When God makes his decision, when Jesus makes the judgment and he weighs things out, even as he mentioned, there will be others who can stand there in judgment of us and say, no, you're not worthy. But Jesus will make that final decision. And there will be no error. Everybody will know. If they are told, depart from me, they're going to know, I didn't have a chance. I didn't live right the way I should have in my day. And even as the writer said, they'll go where the worm dieth not. It will always be gnawing at them. You had opportunity. You had the advantage. You had the time to go. Even you think about how the Lord prompted you to go to service that day and you would not go. He prompted you. He dealt with you to get saved and you would not get saved. And as I said before, God will remember all of those times. So stop and consider, as the writer said, keep the judgment always in view, every day. People don't like to think about that. Well, I want to go do this. If I think about the judgment, I'm not going to be so free to go do it. And that's what you want, where it will keep us from getting, if you will, too close to the edge and even going over the edge at times and thinking, well, nobody saw me do it, so I have to worry about what the saints think. But you do have to worry about what God is thinking.
Yes.
And his thoughts are not our thoughts. So may the Lord help us as we go through this life. Whatever you get out of this meeting, it is not just to have a feel-good feeling. We like it when people shout. As one person said, they enjoy when you have them out-of-order services where people get to shouting and maybe running and time gets away and they don't even have preaching and whatnot. But when it's all said and done, keep the judgment in mind. He will not be joking and jesting when he makes the determination on our souls eternally, and we want to be in the right place at the right time. Pray for me.
Amen. 2, 1, 3.